Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. Scott, here we are again, another day, another episode.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. So there was an event earlier this week up in Washington, D.C. for the Microsoft Tech Summit. And one of the attendees of that event was kind enough to come on the show with us today. So we have Brian Levinson. He is from Microsoft, and he is a Microsoft 365 U.S. Government Product Marketing Manager. And he's going to tell us all about what that means and kind of school us up on Microsoft 365.
Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Brian? And you have a cool hat on too. I'm jealous of your hat. Nobody else can see it, but trust us, he's got a cool hat.
I appreciate it. Nothing like wearing a cool hat and looking my best for an audio recording, of course, right? But really appreciate being invited. This is really exciting, and I'm happy to share a bit about Microsoft 365 for the U.S. government. And, you know, maybe by way of just quick introduction, I'll kind of explain where I've been and how I arrived to this tech summit in D.C. earlier this week. I like to joke that I joined the tech industry when I was 4 years old, the son of a software engineer in Silicon Valley. I used to beta test computer games before it was cool, as I like to say. I then went off to college eventually. After working at some startups throughout the summers, I managed a help desk. I was a technical account manager at Microsoft. And then I joined the product group to really work very closely with engineering teams on how should we be developing Office 365 and then Microsoft 365. And now I specialize in U.S. government, and that spans state, local, tribal, federal, defense, and then also aerospace and defense industry, because those are organizations working closely with the government, holding sensitive information on their behalf. And so that brought me up to the current, where last week I was, well, maybe it feels like last week, it was about 3 days ago, is this week. I was out in D.C. Monday and Tuesday. We had a government tech summit where we brought product group folks, partners, had lots of great conversations with customers and users and really anyone who was interested in coming in and meeting with us to talk about Microsoft stack of infrastructure, platform, software, and how we can enable the government to modernize, digitize citizen services. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. So I was following a lot of that event. I used to live in D.C. and some of those folks, like I think you were on a panel with Dux and Usher and some others. So
yep.
And Prashant. So love all those guys. And it's been a while since I've seen them, but it's always fun to go to those events and I think see how the other side lives. So if you're in the commercial sector and you're playing around in that space, you don't realize how similar but how different it is on the other side as some of these workloads roll out. So even just from the keynotes at the start of the week saying, hey, you know, we have two new data centers coming online, super exciting, right? Like seeing the regional grow out and the ability to expand footprints into new classifications, whether that's expanded availability of like GCC High or DoD, things like that. I think all that stuff's wonderful. So can you give us kind of a high-level overview of some of those announcements that happened out there?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I kind of cut my teeth and grew up in the enterprise commercial space, really started focusing in on government and absolutely love it. The intersection of large organizations using technology to quite literally change the world is really fun and exciting. And then there are some differences. And so you're spot on. We made a couple of announcements earlier this week. So first of all, Microsoft 365 for U.S. government is now available. And Microsoft 365, you know, I've had some great conversations with people. And one of my favorite is when someone corrected me and said, no, I think you mean Office 365. I said, well, I do, but it also includes Windows and the enterprise mobility and security suite of capabilities. And so we really think about Microsoft 365 as being the end-to-end modern workplace solution. And what we were announcing is that this is now available in the government cloud. So Microsoft has a cloud designed very specifically for the U.S. government, where we've implemented our software, same code, all of this, but we've implemented it in a manner that allows us to comply with very specific government regulations. Things like FedRAMP impact level moderate and high, the Department of Defense's security requirement guidelines at level 4 or 5, and we're working on 6. And then things like criminal justice information systems with CJIS, or federal tax information with IRS 1075, of course, protected health information for HIPAA and HITRUST. But ultimately, we introduced Microsoft 365, this end-to-end modern workplace solution in our government cloud. And so that was a really exciting announcement that we made. Part of that is that we've introduced Office 365 a couple of months back at security requirements, guidelines, levels 4 and 5. We're working on FedRAMP High. I could probably bore everyone to death with some of this compliance stuff. I like to geek out over it, but I also recognize that we end up speaking in a whole nother language. And the other parts of these announcements were enterprise mobility and security, Intune, Azure Information Protection, rights management. These capabilities are now also available in the GCC High and DoD environment. And so that's brand new as of this month, so as of March. And then on the Azure side, we introduced, or rather announced, that we're working on Azure Stack to integrate with Azure Government. And Office 365 and Azure are both actively building out Azure Government Secret and Office 365 Secret so that we can support the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, and various federal agencies that work with classified material. And so that's something that we're quite proud of. And I like to say that if the cloud is good enough for this classified material, what is it not secure enough for?
That's an interesting one. So some of the folks we run into occasionally, there are actually organizations that are government organizations. Like I can think of like MOD over in the UK, mm-hmm. right? Ministry yep. of Defense runs all their email in Office 365 Commercial Cloud because, hey, secure enough. They actually didn't need to go into separate enclave or a GovCloud type of implementation. But I think especially within the US government, right? And if you're doing coverage across not only federal, but also state and local and tribal, all those other different areas, it's very interesting when you get into all the, like you said, the labels and the classifications and, you know, how many PCs do I need to do my job today? Oh, only 3. It's okay.
Yep. And I mean, you're spot on. And when we talk to federal government agencies, you know, what people are often used to is like you're describing, actually switching from computer to computer. And that's where our friends in the commercial sector may not be familiar with the way that people are working in the government, where working at Microsoft, I have my personal phone, and because we have a BYOD policy, it's enrolled in Intune, it's managed for device health, conditional access, all the right protection policies are in place, but I can access all the corporate assets from my phone, from my laptop. You know, should I be home visiting family in California and forget my laptop, using multiple factors of authentication and the right security policies, I have access to all that information, whereas many of our friends working in the government have been switching from laptop to laptop, phone to phone. And that might always be there. I know a lot of people that prefer to keep their phones separate so that you don't accidentally send that email to your boss that was supposed to go to a friend or something. But at the end of the day, we're trying to enable really that modern work style, that productive mobility and secure collaboration for government agencies at every level of U.S. government across, like you're saying, state, local, tribal, federal, and defense.
It's exciting to see all these features coming out, all of that availability too for the different government organizations. I know one thing, I've had some government clients too. I looked at the roadmap, even from what you're saying, people are like, well, Intune, Microsoft 365, Microsoft Teams, all of those have been out for a while now. They're just now getting to the government tenant. Is there kind of, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of compliance you have to adhere to and all of that before you can roll these features out. Is there a kind of a timeline you guys have set to try to get these to government clouds after they become available to commercial, or a good way even to keep up? I'm a consultant. I go into people too, and it's hard for even me to keep up with, well, what's in a government tenant? What's in a commercial tenant? How do you even stay up to date on all of that?
So it's a really good question. And I'll break it down first by explaining a little bit of how we bring it to the government cloud. And, you know, you mentioned compliance, and that is the differentiation between our commercial cloud and the U.S. government cloud, where our design principles are that they should be identical in every way, except for where the design changes to meet compliance. So we have a different set of operational personnel who have been screened appropriately to meet the appropriate background checks, and then that allows us to have criminal justice information in the systems, for example. And so GCC, GCC High, and DoD, as well as the public cloud, I suppose, each have a different set of compliance that we absolutely guarantee. GCC High is designed for controlled unclassified information, export controlled data, things like ITAR. GCC is really intended for criminal justice information systems, FedRAMP moderate. And so these commitments are absolutely the top priority for these clouds. Information has to be handled appropriately. And when we think about bringing these new capabilities into the government cloud, and I'm going to be a little bit insular and think about it from kind of the internal Microsoft perspective, we introduce new capabilities, new services, new applications into Office 365, into EMS, into Microsoft 365 in a couple of different ways. So what I mean by that is maybe it's a internal Microsoft developed application. Microsoft Teams is something that we developed. And so that gives us the ability to prepare from the beginning, make sure that it's set up right. And then primarily what we need to do is go deploy it into the right capacity. There's still a bunch of compliance work that needs to happen. We bring in our third-party auditor. They'll do a full, deep audit of the systems, of the operational personnel. They then deliver a security assessment report, and we are able to then deliver that to the federal agencies so that they can issue authorization to operate. The second type of introduction of a service or app, though, is when we make acquisitions. Things like Adalom became Cloud App Security, or various acquisitions that we've made become different capabilities in our cloud services. In many cases, those need to be re-architected or redesigned a little bit, either to run on the Microsoft stack or because when a startup is building up some powerful new innovative technology, they're not always designing for the billions of users that we intend to reach in that global scale. So that often takes a little bit longer if something needs to be re-architected or redesigned or just implemented on the Microsoft stack. And then there's features and functionality. Things like larger mailbox quotas, new features like the communication sites that we see in SharePoint Online. And so those actually tend to roll out at the exact same time as they do in the commercial offerings. When we raised the default quota in Exchange Online from 50 gigabytes per mailbox to 100 gigabytes, that change happened at the exact same time. Now, there's a little bit of nuance that does come into effect in that when we're deploying new capabilities across the global infrastructure, we do so in a very deliberate manner that allows us to use telemetry and use our monitoring to make sure that everything is scaling appropriately, that we're not running into issues or regressions. And we've found that by doing this, we have a very, very high success rate of maintaining the stability of the platform. But it also means that two tenants may not see that new feature at the exact same time. So I say that because when we announce that something is now available and rolling out, we'll often say it's rolling out to X percent of tenants, it's coming to the rest, then it's not that GCC or the government community cloud is at the end of that, but a GCC tenant may not see it at the exact same time as the very, very first release. And that's not to mean that it's coming to them later, but rather it's rolling out and it will reach them, but it's in that same wave of deployment. It's the new apps and services where data is stored somewhere different or the architecture needs to change that we then need to go through the audit process, and that takes some time. They're very, very deep audits. It takes quite a while to both complete all of the activity together and then the documentation later. And so, you know, what we often see is that it takes 6 months to a year, sometimes a little bit longer, to bring some of those new applications and services to the government offerings.
Got it. So what you're really letting us know is that the government doesn't move quickly.
It turns out that the government does not move super quickly. And as a result, Microsoft moves as quickly as we can, but absolutely prioritizes the compliance of the services to make sure that we are enabling the government to handle data appropriately. And I do like to tease people a little bit that the government is slow, but something that I also try to remind myself is that big enterprises are slow too. When we look at the types of infrastructure being run by large enterprises around the world, you know, we're still pulling out Exchange 5.5 from some organizations. We're pulling out, you know, SharePoint. I'm not even going to say what version's going back too far, because at a certain point it was Moss, right? Yep. Before it was SharePoint. And so the government does move slowly. Enterprises move slowly. One of the biggest differences, though, is that for the government, we need to meet the compliance baseline before we can say it's now available to you to start moving to as you're ready.
Got it. So kind of an interesting question. Obviously, with that compliance, there comes more security in some of those cases. Do you guys ever actually have features that start in the government cloud due to security requirements there and then come back to commercial, because commercial could actually leverage some of those same security benefits, some of those same features that hit the government cloud first?
That's a really good question. And I would say the answer is, generally speaking, no. It's not that we would necessarily deploy it in the government cloud first or only there, but rather there are government requirements that get driven into our all-up cloud model. And one of the things that I also like to pick on and poke at a little bit is how I can differentiate compliance from security. And the reason being is that the security of all of our clouds are actually exactly the same, but it's the compliance that's different. And so by example, what I would say is that if government data is defined as ITAR, meaning it's export controlled, if a non-American citizen comes in contact with it, it has been defined as having been exported. Now, I know some non-Americans who are far more trustworthy than some of the Americans that I know. And so I wouldn't even say that whether or not your citizenship says United States makes you a security risk, but rather it's the compliance. It's that this can only be seen and come in contact with American citizens. And so that's where some of this compliance versus security part comes in. But you're spot on that with the security requirements of the government, we do often take these requirements and these considerations, build them into the products because the government requires it, and then that comes to benefit absolutely everyone using the global cloud.
Very neat. So I think you have, I know Scott mentioned to building out the Office 365 secret environment. I don't have as much history with the government cloud as Scott does. So I'm assuming that's one step even above the DoD. Is that something that's coming? Can you not talk about it because it's a secret?
I love the concept of announcing a secret, right? It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Didn't Amazon even do that? They did something like, hey, AWS, we're launching these top secret clouds in these regions. And everybody's like, well, doesn't that defeat the purpose of a top secret cloud?
Exactly. So you're spot on. And the way that Microsoft thinks about it, at least in the naming that we've applied, I mean, I'll caveat this as being for Microsoft 365. And then I'll explain for Azure, where just slightly different implementation model. For Microsoft 365, and looking at Office as an example of that, Office 365 was a single global implementation of our software stack. Looking back, I'm going to date myself in my time at Microsoft here, but you know, maybe 10-ish years ago, we had BPOS. BPOS S was BPOS Shared, and this was our global offering. And what we did is we carved out capacity and guaranteed that if you were part of the government community cloud, your data would be stored in the continental United States. And we were able to ring fence that infrastructure with screened personnel. Fast forward, and so that was about 2012. Fast forward to roughly 2015, we're talking to the Department of Defense, we're talking to federal agencies, and recognize that in order to meet some of the more stringent compliance requirements of the security requirements guidelines issued by DISA, for example, we had to implement a fully isolated, absolutely removed cloud model. That became Azure Government. And on top of that, Office built, as well as EMS built, another implementation of our software stack. So for Office 365, that's where we built GCC High and DoD. These are identical in almost every way. The main difference is that the DoD set of infrastructure built on top of Azure Government is for the exclusive use of the Department of Defense And as such, we were able to get it authorized at security requirements guidelines level 5.
That makes DISA happy.
Exactly. It makes DISA very happy. We're able to meet the requirements of mission systems and controlled unclassified information. The GCC high environment is designed to be absolutely identical, but it's a multi-tenanted infrastructure that is shared by defense industry, government contractors, aerospace, a lot of commercial entities holding ITAR or DFARS classified data, and as well as a number of federal agencies for whom we're getting an accreditation for FedRAMP High. So GCC and DoD are designed for controlled unclassified information. And so then the next step above that becomes classified information at secret. And that's what we're actively working to build out. And that's where we start to get into talking about SCIFs and some of the other interesting and pretty cool areas. But that is very much a subset of the Department of Defense and of the federal government that is much smaller than those who work with controlled unclassified information.
That's awesome. So I'm going to put some links in the show notes to the service descriptions. So I don't think a lot of, like, I'm a huge fan of the service descriptions. And I don't think a lot of folks probably realize that the government service descriptions are out there as well, both for GCC, GCC High, and DoD. And one of the neat things about the Office 365 service descriptions, at least, is when you break those down, they actually have a section, feature nuances based on compliant cloud architecture. And it'll go ahead and just put all that right out there for you, which is excellent. You have a short link. You need to get a better one. So I like just office365sd.com, and that redirects in. None of this aka.ms stuff, but we'll make sure that we include that one as well.
Cool. Yep, that takes you straight to the gov page, but you're right. The other one is much, much easier to remember.
Someone should go see if there's an office365sdgov.com that you can redirect.
Ah, that is a good question. I should be on that. And, you know,
it's a race to go buy a domain.
Oh no, we're going to find a domain squatter within the next few minutes. You know, what's really pretty cool to me is that not only do I geek out about the technology and the capabilities, and I mean, I work for Microsoft, I love this stuff, but the timing could not be better because we're seeing these trends across the federal government, across state governments, local governments, when it comes to things like smart cities, connected individuals and digitizing the citizen services. You know, for years and years, we've had these massive data sets and maybe struggled to capture the data, but really struggled to decide what do we do based on this data. But think about how cool it is if, you know, if I'm a citizen of, let's say, Austin, Texas, and I'm throwing out a random city that I just happen to like, and I'm walking down the street and I see a pothole, and so I go to the city's app and I can take a picture of that pothole using the GPS of my phone, that could cut a ticket straight to the Department of Transportation, and they know, there's a pothole here, okay, we can prioritize that against this other pothole that's a little bit smaller, we'll go do this one first. Or, you know, really cool things where we're also helping the federal government modernize their infrastructure. And here's where we're going to start to get into some of my nerdier side. Executive Order 13800 required the director of the American Technology Council, in conjunction with, I believe it was DHS and Department of Commerce and a few other agencies, they put together a federal IT report for the president that outlined where the infrastructure is today, where they want it to get to, and actually quite deliberately said, we want you to start moving email and collaboration solutions into the cloud as quickly as possible. We want to start modernizing our stack of infrastructure. We don't want to invest in data centers. We don't want to be building up more and more infrastructure. Look at what the cloud can do. And we see that even with things going on in Congress, with the MGT Act, or Modernizing Government Technology, where Congress, both the House, the Senate, and then signed by the President, start to put in place processes and frameworks that allow federal agencies to invest in the future of their IT. And that's really, really cool. It's the intersection of policy and technology and all the good stuff that we love.
Yeah, I can imagine with the government, with the amount of data that they have that we are in denial that they do have, you see completely different trends, implementations, just a cloud at a whole different scale as you start looking at some of what the government needs, uses, what they do. I'm sure that's super interesting to kind of watch them leverage technology.
It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, you're spot on. The volume of data that the government processes is unprecedented in history. I mean, it is insane what we look at these data sets. And so when we can start to make intelligent decisions based on Well, let's think about, you know, on a micro scale, traffic data being captured by little sensors, Internet of Things, you know, along a highway. We can start to design our roads better based on real-time data of traffic over a 1-2 month period. As the roads are being built, we can decide where it should need to go and how many lanes it needs. We saw a really, really cool demo at the GovTech Summit about how the Department of Transportation in Alaska uses internet-connected devices monitoring weather patterns to make sure that the roads are updated appropriately. And, you know, some of these things that just haven't been possible or would have required thousands upon thousands of manual hours to execute are now possible in minutes or even automated. Think about machine learning algorithms where we can start to pick up on trends, and if someone's moving around on a website for too long and looks like they're lost, we start to pop up and offer them help in a really intelligent way and not just a Clippy saying, hey, looks like you need some help. Although I do love Clippy.
That's great. I never even thought about that. So I used to work for a Microsoft partner where we used to do City Next initiatives, like you mentioned. And it's really great. Had that intersection of Office 365 and Azure and all the services across the stack when we think about combining all the other licensing constructs and having the entire Microsoft 365 stack available to everyone.
It's so cool. It's so cool. I mean, I could geek out about this for hours, but you know, you imagine the police officer who is out on the street, and instead of having to go back to the police station to write up reports every couple of hours, they can start to do it on their tablet or on their phone, send those back automatically, have it processed, the records management. If you think about the number of processes where government agencies need to process paper and file it and make sure that a record is kept, you start to store that type of thing in SharePoint, apply some records management on top, advanced e-discovery where you can do deduplication and machine learning algorithms for smart searches. I mean, this stuff starts to just change the way that companies do business and governments operate. It is so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Just the scale, like you said, the scale, the computing, the stuff you can do, even me as a single person company contractor, just the amount of resources and computing resources I have access to is just me. It's cool to see how it scales from one all the way up to thousands and thousands, and even hundreds of thousands of people within an organization.
Yeah, and actually a great example, and you're spot on that as an individual, well, I'm going to quote some of the Microsoft ads now. We have more computing power in our fingertips than generations that came before us, right? I mean, it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's true. You and I can go write an application. Well, I can't write an application, but hypothetically, I could write an application, put it up into Azure, and scale it out to be useful to the entire U.S. Army. Now, I can't write an application. They're not going to want to use anything that I could write. But, you know, the concept that a small startup, a small group of individuals, even a single person can create something that scales to the use of millions of people is so cool and so powerful. And I would say that the government is recognizing this. The Department of Defense has started a new program, DIUX, where they've got basically a startup accelerator in Silicon Valley, and they're changing procurement policies so that they can take advantage of new technologies from these small, agile, cool, innovative companies while not having to wait because it takes them years and years and years to build out massive data centers. They can leverage Microsoft's or, well, there are other cloud providers. Hopefully they leverage Microsoft's and start to take advantage of this massive scale that can happen in just a heartbeat.
Is DIUX kind of like 18F was, but more geared towards DOD?
I'm going to say yes, but I'm not familiar with 18F.
We'll leave that one for another time then. Ways government spends money to modernize.
Yeah, another show. Yeah,
that sounds about right. Basically, the government has created a startup accelerator for the defense industry. They stuck it in Silicon Valley and said, we want little tech companies to be able to build for the whole U.S. Military.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So that about takes us to time. Brian, as we go, good ways for people to stay in touch with you, keep up to date on what's going on in the government cloud, any last parting words you have for us?
Yeah, I would say that my very favorite resource is not just a way to read and learn, but also keep in touch, and that's the Microsoft Tech community. Go out to the web, check out the Microsoft Tech community. There are thousands upon thousands of people active there on a daily basis that include Microsoft partners, experts, SMEs, customers, colleagues, and peers. I got to say, we have a little bit of fun there too. So check out the Microsoft tech community, pose questions, learn best practices, and that way we all keep in touch and learn from one another.
All right. And on the tech community, do you have a spot that's just for GovCloud, or is that kind of everybody?
Under consideration. So I would say right now the best way is pose a question and just clarify that you're asking about GovCloud or for Gov use. And we are thinking about spinning up a separate government space, but I actually really like the general Office 365 space because it's honestly just a bigger community. So you can learn from a broader set of experts.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks again, Brian. Really appreciated having you on. It was very educational. Lots of fun to hear about what you guys are doing in that government space.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.